Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Well, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. You're listening to American Family Radio. We're here for the next hour and a half. We're going to be talking about some big stories that are in the news. Some have developed over the weekend, and some have happened even this morning. I'm Tim Wildman with Ed Battagliano. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
And Walker Wildman. Good morning, Walker.
Good morning. Good to be here.
Walker, tell our listeners how they can follow us on Facebook.
Yes, if you want to watch the show or just comment on the show, you can go to our Today's Issues Facebook page. You'll also find all the sources to the news stories that we talk about on the Today's Issues page. You can read more in detail into the information that we talk about here. And lastly, AFR.net is where you can live stream the show also. You can listen live, AFR.net, 24/7, as long as you have an internet connection.
And Walker, we have an app. Too,
we do. In addition to listening live on AFR.net, you can listen live on the AFR American Family Radio application on your smart device.
Anywhere in the world.
That's right.
As long as you have high-speed internet connection. Well, we appreciate you folks listening. Hope you had a great weekend. Fred Jackson is with us as well. Fred's news director for American Family Radio.
Good morning, Fred. Good to be with you. Good to be with you. Had a great weekend.
Did you really?
I ran into
What was the highlight of your weekend?
I ran into Walker at the skating rink.
Fred and I were skating together.
I hope you weren't holding hands.
Hold on just a minute. I think you need to do a little bit more explanation.
Let's clarify that one.
we have a our Coliseum here in Tupelo has an ice rink in the winter.
Yes.
Is that right?
For about 8 weeks they put about ice in it.
So Fred being the Canadian. Mm. Went down
and
there.
And I've heard he's a good skater.
Yeah, well, I hope so.
He is pretty good.
Right?
Yes.
So Walker went down there. This was your first time to ice skate, right, Walker?
Second. I've only ice skated one time in my life.
And he did. I came up to him. I said, you've skated before.
Yeah.
And it was just one time?
Yeah.
This was my second.
Yeah. I'm impressed.
This weekend.
Yeah. So you saw each other?
Yeah, sure did. We're starting a plan for an AFA hockey team.
Yeah, we are.
Which, when he told me, I said, well, I hope they do better than the AFA softball team.
We got to secure the funding first.
It's disgraceful.
You need a sponsor, do you, Walker?
Yeah, we need a sponsor.
A sponsor and jerseys. We want an AFA hockey team.
Jersey. Well, I'll join if I get a jersey. Now, does Susie ice skate too?
Susie doesn't skate, but my oldest.
He's from Mississippi.
Yeah, my oldest daughter, Valerie, is an avid skater.
Really?
She would love the opportunity to play on a girls' hockey team.
So she can play hockey, not just skate.
She's given me the elbow a few times and took my wind away. I tell you what.
I tell you what. Next time this happens, this meeting that y'all, this impromptu
we
meeting,
colluded. We colluded over the weekend.
I think you guys need to get your cell phone out.
Oh, he did. Yeah. I saw that a couple of times.
Yeah, my wife and I took some pictures.
Hey, he's a millennial. He selfies. All right.
Yeah. We selfied
on the ice while
skating.
You were skating.
Yes, sir.
Oh, absolutely.
That takes some skill, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Got to put that on the Facebook there.
All right. There you go. Put on.
Yeah, that's what
page.
I'm saying. I think folks would appreciate watching you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
Put that up there.
That's just you standing there.
Yeah.
Well, we're skating and
oh,
taking
you
pictures.
Were skating. Okay.
Yeah, it was on the move.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right.
Now, Will, who's from Louisiana, Abe, who's from Louisiana, is sitting on ice. What? You can skate on it?
I've actually been ice skating.
Well,
have you
there
really?
You go. Yes.
I went to college in Oklahoma, so I ice skated. They have ice skating rings there. So
yeah.
I've actually been about 12 times.
That's wow. Well, there's three players for your hockey team. I can't skate well.
I'll tell you another guy who's from our local area here who can skate really well. Good friend of this ministry, Steve Tiber, because he's from the Buffalo area.
Yeah.
And when they remove the snow, there's often ice underneath in Buffalo.
Now, I played street hockey growing up. I led the league.
When y'all get through with memory lane, let
scoring
me know here.
In high
I'm
school.
I'm just going to sit here and wait on y'all to get through with memory
played
lane.
Played on a championship team at the Southern California College, street
well,
hockey.
Wow. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
That's a great memory.
Yeah.
Are you through?
I'm through.
Okay. I don't want to interfere with
you. Here's the thing. I'm just discovering something, Tim.
Yeah.
You know, I'm trying to break my Diet Coke habit, so I'm drinking coffee right now. I think this amps me up more than Diet Coke.
I think so. Because you know what?
Let's do jumping jacks.
You got a serious stream of consciousness going on right here right now. I might just,
I'm so excited.
Just
I don't know why.
We might just want to just turn you loose. It'd be a one-man Ed show here. All right. Now.
Yes.
You heard the voice of Abraham Hamilton III. Mm-hmm. Abe is with us for a reason. Now, just to comment on ice skating. But Abe is a constitutional attorney as well as being general counsel for American Family Association and a radio talk show host here each afternoon from 5:05 to 6 o'clock Central Time. But the reason I wanted Abe to come in outside of his normal Wednesday appearance is because and we're switching into – serious news mode here, okay, is a decision.
United States Supreme Court this morning
said
it would not intervene in the legal battle over what's being called the religious freedom law in Mississippi. It has a more formal name than that, but they said they would not intervene. Now, this follows a lower appellate court decision that upheld the law, which well, let's bring Abe in because Abe is more familiar with the law, the wording of the law. But the good news is the lower court ruling said no, the law stands. The law went into effect, I think, last October.
Yes, over a year now.
But there was the other side went to the Supreme Court, the United States Supreme Court tried to get it stopped. United States Supreme Court this morning said no, we're going to let the lower court ruling stand.
Yes. Yes, so last year, actually 2016, October 2016, Mississippi's legislature passed and Governor Phil Bryant signed House Bill 1523, which is called the Protecting Freedom of Conscience from Government Discrimination Act. The law sought to accomplish three The law sought to protect freedom of conscience concerning three primary issues. One, that sex is defined at birth and is immutable. Two, that marriage is exclusive lifelong union of one man, one woman, and three, people who believe the biblical view of human sexuality, people who maintain those three primary beliefs will be protected against government discrimination in the state of Mississippi. To put a summary on it clearly, Mississippi did not want to have happen here what happened to Kim Davis. All right. So in passing that law, it was challenged at the federal district court level. Mississippi federal district court judge Carlton Reeves struck down House Bill 1523. That decision was appealed to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, where the Fifth Circuit said, wait a minute, there has been no injury here. The parties who advanced the litigation saying that it was a discriminatory law had not suffered any discrimination. And the Fifth Circuit said, wait a minute, we can't function off of hypotheticals. So we're going to uphold House Bill 1523. And now this morning it was announced that those parties appealed the Fifth Circuit decision, attempted to appeal it to the Supreme Court. And the United States Supreme Court said, no, we're not going to intervene, which means that the Fifth Circuit decision stays in place.
Now, in court jargon, there's something called maybe jargon's not the right word, but there's something called standing.
Yes.
Right, Abe? So what was argued here, the people, the groups that brought the case against the state of Mississippi here, arguing this was a discriminatory law, a law that promoted discrimination against LGBT folks, they had no standing, right? Which means, let's just be fair here, the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals in New Orleans is a federal appellate court, and now the Supreme Court of the United States,
right?
They didn't rule on the merits of the law itself.
That's right.
They simply said, nobody here bringing this before us has standing or has been, can show any kind of injury, as you put it, because of the law, right?
That's exactly right. And using the Kim Davis example, what the law simply said is that if you happen to be a district court clerk or a court clerk, and you have a biblically based belief that marriage is between one man and one woman, and based on your biblical Christian faith,
religious freedom,
that you cannot, based on your conscience, be involved in that process, you could recuse yourself. It doesn't mean that the people who are applying can't get a license.
Right.
It just means
right.
that you can't force Kim Davis to be the one to
right.
issue it. What the court said is that there have been no instances that has resulted in people either recusing themselves or resulting in people not being able to get a marriage license if they are, you know, purporting to be a homosexual couple. So the court says that they lack standing, to use your legal term of art, to say that you cannot claim damages when you have not suffered any damage in pursuit of your rights.
Big victory here for the state of Mississippi and for religious freedom in the country, especially in the state of Mississippi. What you have too here, does this law protect people who are in maybe the wedding,
yes,
the wedding industry, who from being compelled to, like Jack Phillips, for example, from being compelled to participate in same-sex marriages or lose their livelihood?
Yeah, and the law in Mississippi, House Bill 1523, would have prevented a Jack Phillips case from ever starting in the state of Mississippi, because the state government and the legislature, and signed into law by the governor, sought to protect freedom of conscience for Mississippians.
Well, let me just ask one quick question, just from the legal perspective we're talking with. Let's say Jack Phillips, now this is the Colorado baker, mm-hmm. let's say he lived in Mississippi, mm-hmm. and a homosexual couple came to him. They wanted him to create the cake for them, and he said, I can't do that, mm-hmm. and this new law protects me. That in itself is not considered damage for the homosexual couple unless they can't get their cake anywhere else. Is that true?
That's exactly right. And to put a more fine point on it, in Jack Phillips' case, he did not deny them the ability to purchase a cake from him.
Right.
He even offered them any other cake that was in
their store,
off the shelf. The thing that he declined to do was to create a unique, customized design. And so the issue, once again, is would have only risen to the place of potential damage if they were not been able to get a cake, period, which was not the case in Jack Phillips' case, and it most likely wouldn't be the case anywhere.
Try to get in touch with the governor's office, Governor Phil Bryan of Mississippi, to get him to come on our program to comment, as he has before. He's unavailable right now. But we're talking about the fact that Fred has one more question for Abe, then we can move on, talk about Oprah. But in case you haven't heard, and this has happened in the last hour and a half or so, the Supreme Court of the United States let stand the law of the state of Mississippi called HB 1523, a religious freedom law. That's a shorthand term. But the Human Rights Campaign, that's the largest LGBT activist group in America, they and others claimed that this was the end of the world as we know it for gay people. And what has happened in here is as the governor predicted, nobody's done anything to discriminate against LGBT people in Mississippi. That's why they can't prove their case. That's exactly why they can't prove. You would think after all this time, this year or whatever it's been, they would have just dozens and dozens of examples of how LGBT people have been discriminated against because of this law, and they can't find one. That's why the Supreme Court said, you know, basically get out of here. Nobody's hurt.
And it just goes to show the vacuous nature and the hollowness of those arguments, because you're saying that we people who have religious beliefs, they really want to use it as a cloak for discrimination.
Yes.
When the facts are, when the facts are evaluated, that nobody can show an example that this law is being used to discriminate against them.
Right. Fred?
The other homosexual activist story that we talk about a lot is the transgender issue. And this law also says that a person who has the belief that a person's gender is set at birth is protected under this law. Mm-hmm. So a restaurant owner who has a men's and ladies washroom can say to some guy who says, I think I'm a girl today, the owner of the restaurant can say, well, no, you're not, right, despite what you may think, and you're not allowed to use that other washroom.
That's right.
So yeah. he's protected under this then.
Right, and it doesn't compel anybody to do that, but if a person has that belief,
right,
then they would be protected under this law.
Again, the scenario that was painted by the LGBT activist groups and the people who sympathize with them and the liberals in this case was, here's what they wanted you to believe, and we've talked about this before, that let's say a gay man walks into a restaurant and sits down and wants to order lunch. What the LGBT crowd wants you to believe is that the waiter can come up to them and say, you look, you know, before I bring you your iced tea. You look gay to me. And I got to know, because if you're gay, you're out of here. I mean, it's serving your lunch. And that's the scenario
right.
put forth by the that they wanted you to believe would actually.
And the media picked up that all over the country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that never happens. And that never happens, would never happen. It's mass hysteria based on no evidence. And the Supreme Court upheld the Mississippi Religious Freedom Law this morning. I say upheld. I mean, in essence, that's what they did, right?
Yeah,
they let it stand.
In effect, that is what they've done. They've right. decided that the Fifth Circuit rightly decided the case, yeah. and there's no issue for them to litigate.
Yeah. All right, Abraham Hamilton III, who do you All have right. on this afternoon?
Well, I'll be talking about this, and we'll be talking about Oprah 2020.
Okay, thank you, Abe. That's Abe Hamilton. Abe is our expert legal resource here at American Family Association. The brother knows constitutional law, and we're so glad to have him on our team. All right, Fred Jackson, talking about Oprah Winfrey.
You want to talk about Oprah?
I do want to talk about Oprah for just a minute.
All right.
Now, tell us what's going on in Oprah world.
Well, she was a star last night at the Golden Globe Awards. Mm-hmm. These are the awards given out to actors, actresses from all over the world.
You know, I watched nothing of that last night.
Neither did I.
I watched zero also.
Yeah. Walker, Golden Globes for you last night?
He's too busy skating.
Yeah, I was too busy skating.
So we're 0 for 4 here. Brent, did you watch any Golden Globes last night?
Okay. Uh-oh, we didn't see it.
Go ahead.
Well, listen, it's being talked about almost like the second coming. You know, it's all over it this morning. You know, the Hollywood sexual scandal was talked about a lot. A lot of people wore black in connection with all of that.
Right.
Anyway, last night, Oprah Winfrey gave a speech. She won an award for one of the acting things that she did. And they were tweeting out there this morning. A number of tweets were saying, Oprah for 2020. That's what they were saying. Can you imagine? Oprah for...
Well, and apparently she gave a very well-received speech.
Right, she did.
I watched a part of it.
She did.
And you know, she had a very, very difficult childhood. She was mm-hmm. abused, sexually abused by multiple men in mm-hmm. her life, even was impregnated and lost by miscarriage. So she has quite a story, and apparently it really connected in conjunction with the Harvey Weinstein and all that other kind of
stuff. I didn't see the speech she gave. I'm going to watch it later today that Oprah gave at the Golden Globes. But it was about this subject
right.
of sexual harassment and the treatment of women. And I think that's what she was applauded for, and that's what was well received.
And let's just say, rightfully so.
I mean, there's
no room for that, and that's something left and right we can all agree on. Doesn't mean I want her as president, but it was apparently a good speech.
But because of that talk that she gave last night and her enormous popularity, and because we now know that a Hollywood celebrity can win the president of the United States.
Yes, mm-hmm. That's right.
I mean, Donald Trump was...
Yeah, you can't, if you're a conservative, you can't
Celebrity
say,
Apprentice
yeah,
for 10 years, the right. number one show, and he uses that to gain name recognition, which led to his
right.
presidency. Anyway, go ahead.
So anyway, Twitter last night, by the way, she accepted the Cecil B. DeMille Lifetime Achievement Award there last night in her speech. After her speech, Twitter went crazy, started to light up with the hashtag Oprah 2020. Comedian Sarah Silverman tweeted, Oprah Michelle 2020. Michelle Obama, I assume that's referring to.
She doesn't want it.
Winfrey's longtime partner, I'm reading from the Associated Press here, Stedman Graham, tells the Los Angeles Times, it's up to the people whether she will be president, adding, quote, she would absolutely do it, end quote.
Wow.
So if lifetime partner says she would do it, they must have talked about it.
She could win.
I think she would be a very formidable candidate. Now, see, a lot of people would, you know, at first blush, would laugh at the idea of Oprah, but they did the same thing with Trump.
Right.
Yeah.
And here's the danger for a Trump reelection. Because he does all the tweeting and there's always that kind of chaos, much of it generated by the media, you know, in biased fashion, you could get to the point where, you know, in 2020, people are going, you know, I'm exhausted with the chaos surrounding President Trump. Let's put a woman in there to calm things down. I mean, I'm just saying, just the way people think, or maybe that's not thinking. You know, they're just going by feelings, obviously.
Yeah.
But I could see her being a very formidable candidate.
She would have to have some kind of, she would have to be known for something other than her TV show. I mean, she would have to campaign on some kind of promise or agenda, and I don't know what it would be.
Well, she's a businesswoman. I mean, she's a billionaire. I don't know how many billions she's got.
But
she's a businesswoman.
I never hear her talk out on issues. Like, I never hear her talk about the fight against jihad. I don't hear her talk about tax reform. So is she all of a sudden going to go from, you know, covering fluff on her TV show, cooking and stuff, to then talking about foreign policy? I mean, she's going to have to get involved somehow.
In terms of thinking people, that would be a stretch for a lot of thinking people.
Right.
I'm just not sure how many thinking people we have who come out to
vote.
Because
President Trump was known for his tweets on politics before he even ran for president. Mm-hmm. I mean, he would tweet on Obama's.
And he ran on his economics.
Yeah, so there would have to be some kind of.
And on build the wall.
Yeah,
there would have to be something like that she kind of gets everybody riled up for.
Yeah, I agree. You got to have two or three big issues that you're championing.
Yeah.
When you've got Hollywood and the news media on your side, that'll be.
But the other variable is the Democratic Party. You know, there are people in the Democratic Party who want to run in 2020.
Oh, I think
long-time politicians.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She'd have to win in primaries,
yes.
I think.
Yeah, and that's where she might run into some difficulty.
Come on, guys.
I know. We had this discussion.
Come on.
You weren't in there, Fred.
I'm going to mock you right here. She would not have any competition. No, let me put it this way. She would have competition, as in a name
but
or
they wouldn't
two,
stand a chance.
But they wouldn't stand a chance against Oprah Winfrey in a primary. I don't think, you know, if I'm wrong, you can come back and mock me, but I think she wins everything. If she goes against another Democrat and what Democrat is going to come out and say Oprah Winfrey lacks experience or, you know, she doesn't.
Well, who's going to run against Hillary Clinton? She had a few, but they didn't get anywhere.
Well, Bernie Sanders almost won the nomination.
Yeah,
that's right.
He basically did.
That's right.
I think this, like the super delegates for the Democratic Party. I think people on the Democratic side would be hesitant to throw all their support behind another candidate and reelect Donald Trump without going through a screening process. I think the super delegates would go, we're going to wait and see. You got like Gavin Newsom. You got all these Democrats. Is he still mayor of San Francisco? Gavin Newsom. Anyway, all these people who have been kind of have the eyes on the prize kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I mentioned Kamala Harris. Mm-hmm. I got booed and hissed in our meeting this morning because everyone said she wouldn't run.
Raise your hand if you know who she is out there, people in Radio Land.
Yeah.
No. But she's a Democratic.
She's a growing rock star.
But surely you mentioned Pocahontas.
Yeah, I mean Elizabeth Warren from Massachusetts. I just think Oprah would have to run the gauntlet.
Why I don't think she would run.
Who?
The Oprah Winfrey. Or be backed. The DNC, they cherry pick everyone that leads their party. And if you're not on the bandwagon of the DNC and have a lifelong DNC career, then you're not
Joe
welcome.
Biden might run again in 2020.
Y'all are totally missing the power of Oprah, which is a gravitational force, much like the moon and the waves.
We'll see.
The tide, not the waves.
And you're just talking about her star power.
Yes.
In other words, that's not a weight joke.
No, because she's up and down on that deal anyway.
Yeah.
You know, she's got it figured out because you gain weight, then you lose.
Well, I've lost 300 pounds over the last 5 years. I gain two, I lose two, I gain two, I lose two.
I have nothing to say to that. We'll be back in a minute.
On the next Today's Issues, our guest will be Sandy Rios of Sandy Rios in the Morning.
Since the passage of the tax bill, which of course was pushed through by the sheer force of will, I think, by President Donald Trump, Over 100 companies are giving Trump bonuses after the tax victory.
We'll also hear news and analysis from newsmen Fred Jackson and Steve Jordahl. Don't miss the next Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio and on Facebook.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. You know, our spiritual heritage tours fill up each year several months in advance, and we've got the dates now for our 2018 trips. There are two tours. There's one to Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon, the home of George Washington, and then there's a separate trip to Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown, where we'll explore early American history. Now, if you want information on these tours, simply go to the website spiritualheritagetours.com. spiritualheritagetours.com for all the information. Again, in June and September, you can go on one or you can go on both. They're back to back. We plan them that way. Again, June and September, Washington, D.C. and Williamsburg. For all the information, go to spiritualheritagetours.com, and I hope to see you on one of our spiritual heritage tours.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. Liberty University is preparing students to enter a competitive job market. They have a low student-to-professor ratio, a caring Christian faculty, and more than 550 programs of study, ranging from undergraduate certificates to doctoral degrees. As the largest Christian university in the world, Liberty continues to establish itself as both a leading liberal arts university and an institution dedicated to the Christian faith. Learn more at liberty.edu. That's liberty.edu. The Sons and Daughters of Nutley, New Jersey, have served in every war since the American Revolution. There are monuments all over town honoring those who served and those who died. About 4 years ago, J.D. Vick, a teacher at the local high school, organized a Patriot Club, teaching young people about their heritage, a way to promote patriotism and honor our veterans. The other day, about a dozen young men bundled up on a snowy Saturday morning armed with shovels. The boys braved frigid temperatures to clear pathways to the World War II and Vietnam War memorials. Coach Vick says they wanted to make sure veterans knew they were not forgotten. He says that's why they teach patriotism at Nutley High School. He said those are the values that matter, to make sure the next generation never forgets the sacrifice of the previous generation. Nutley, New Jersey. Home of the brave. I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. I'm Tim Wildman with Ed Battagliano, Walker Wildman, and Fred Jackson. We thank you for listening to American Family Radio. You can watch the show and or listen. If you just want to listen, you can do that as well at our Today's Issues Facebook page. We are live video streaming there. Walker is also posting the stories that we talk about here on the program. Just to review, we've talked about the fact that Mississippi religious freedom law was upheld by the Supreme Court of the United States, HB 1523. Basically, they let it stand. They let the law go into effect. I'm talking about the U.S. Supreme Court now, because they said nobody's been harmed by this, despite the outrageous claims by the LGBT community that they would somehow be discriminated.
Well, the Human Rights Campaign said millions of Mississippi gays, right, and lesbians would be harassed, right, and persecuted.
Yeah.
And there's only 3 million people in the whole state.
Right. So you would think if there were millions of LGBT people being discriminated against in Mississippi because of this law, you could find one,
right,
that could come forth and say, hey, this happened to me.
Yeah.
This is how I've been harmed. So that's good news to protect people of faith in the state of Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
And then also the second thing is we've been discussing is Oprah Winfrey. Will she run for president? Mm-hmm. And you may say, well, that's not worthy of a lot of time. Well, we're talking about the presidency of the United States here. And if you don't think she can win, I think she could win personally, because of just the I mean, who would have thought that Donald Trump could become president, you know? Mm-hmm. You build your name recognition, and she has universal name recognition, Oprah Winfrey, and she's beloved by the by America, mm-hmm. okay? And she's a liberal, so the media love her. The Hollywood crowd loves her.
She's black. She's a woman. She has a compelling story of overcoming terrible sexual abuse as a child. I mean, there's a lot of factors. That's why I say she would be a formidable candidate.
Yeah.
And we're not making, we're not just saying, let's talk about this possibility. This is because of last night's Golden Globe Awards.
Right.
The speech she gave. And now there's a lot of Twitter, messages going out, tweets.
But
suggesting she run in 2020.
Her, is it her boyfriend?
Her longtime partner.
Her longtime partner.
What is that?
Stedman, is it Graham?
Yeah, it's Stedman Graham. Well,
what did he say about this?
He told the Los Angeles Times last night, it's up to the people whether she will be president, adding, quote, she would absolutely do it, end quote.
Well, then that he should know.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's surprising because, I mean, a woman in her position, you got all the money in the world, everybody loves you.
Here's how.
And you got, you got a great life and you want to. Well, of course, that's what I said about Donald Trump, too. Same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Walker.
Here's how I think she could, and I'm not often for giving Democrat advice, but here's some advice just for any candidate. In her position, she has great name recognition. Mm-hmm. She seems to have a good face for TV and a good personality. So if she wants to run in 2020 and I think have a formidable chance, like Ed mentioned, then she needs to first gather a team and start figuring out what issues she wants to kind of champion.
Mm-hmm.
And she could be a champion for those issues between now and 2020 and kind of build up to be known for something other than just TV.
Yeah.
And go on talk shows.
Yeah, and kind of build up some knowledge on foreign policy, on economics, and she may already have some of this. We just may not hear about it. But she would need to build up some issues that people know her by that are very, very popular issues and build up, I guess, some political knowledge.
And here's something else, and this is very sad for me to say this, something else that works in her favor politically is she's very new agey.
Yes.
And by that I mean to say, because she doesn't really stand for anything in terms of religion,
mm-hmm.
nobody gets offended.
Yeah.
So anytime you have Ted Cruz or someone, oh, he's a Bible-banging, Bible-thumping bigot, mm-hmm. She's not going to have any of that. She's going to have that.
All roads lead to God.
All roads lead to God.
I think the millennials would come out, a swath of the millennials would all come out and vote for her,
mm-hmm.
the younger population.
Oh, I'm telling you, she could absolutely win. I'm just telling you. As I mentioned earlier, and then we'll move on to the next topic here, but we live in a, and I know conservative folks don't like to hear what I'm about to say, but when you look at the Electoral College map in America today, and it's been this way for a decade now or more, we live in a Democrat wins default position. All right, it's the Democrats have to work hard to lose the presidency. That's what Hillary Clinton did. She worked hard to lose the presidency, and she did. And it was shocking. It was shocking for a lot of people because President Trump, then candidate Trump, had to pull off a royal flush, and he did. And because you live in you got California and New York, two of the largest, the two largest states, right?
Right. Yes. Mm-hmm. In terms of electoral college.
Yes.
Votes.
You add Illinois to that.
Right.
The Democrats don't even have to work in those states to win. You start out with those three states. Like Oprah Winfrey would, or any Democrat, but especially her, I think with her enormous popularity, then it's hard to lose.
Add New Jersey, you add Maryland, those are almost automatic.
Yeah. All right, you're listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. What's the next story, Fred?
Breaking news. President Donald Trump does not like CNN.
That's shocking.
It's shocking.
You heard it here first, folks.
Yes.
Really? Really, Ed? They heard it here first?
And the latest version of this distaste between the White House and CNN came over the weekend yesterday. Steve Miller, who is a senior advisor to President Trump, was invited, one has to assume, onto the CNN State of the Union program, which is hosted by Jake Tapper. And Tapper wanted to talk about the book that everybody now is familiar with, The Fire and Fury Inside the Trump White House by Michael Wolff, in which former Trump advisor Steve Bannon is quoted as saying some pretty nasty things about the president. So Steve Miller goes on CNN State of the Union with host Jake Tapper, and they get into it. And I want to play you a little excerpt from that encounter yesterday.
Well, just to finish, Jake, because, you know, your network's been going 24-7 with all this salacious coverage, and I know that it brings a lot of you guys a lot of joy to trying to stick the knife in. But the reality is that page after page after page of the book is pure false. A self-made billionaire who revolutionized reality TV and who has changed the course of our politics.
He's watching and he's happy that you said that. But,
you know, Jake, you can be condescending.
I'm not being condescending. I'm trying to get to the point that Steve Bannon.
You can be condescending. That was a snide remark. You're sure he's watching and he's happy? Let me tell you something.
Why is that?
Your network, you can be as condescending as you want. It's part of your MO. But listen, you can have 24/7.
I have no idea why you're attacking me.
Well, I'll explain to you. I'll tell you why I'm attacking
Steve Bannon,
you.
If you let me ask this question.
No, because you have President, 24 hours of negative anti-Trump hysterical coverage on this network that led in recent weeks to some spectacularly embarrassing false reporting.
I think the viewers right now can ascertain who's being hysterical.
The viewers are entitled to have 3 months of the truth. Why don't you just give me 3 minutes to tell you the truth about Donald Trump that I know? And then all of our campaign staff
because it's
know,
my show and I don't want to do that.
I was booked to talk about the very issues I'm just describing, and you're not even asking about them because they're not interesting facts to you.
That's not true. I have plenty of questions on immigration. You've attempted to filibuster by talking about your flights
to
the president.
No, I'm not.
I want to ask you a question because
don't be condescending. Jake,
the president and the White House.
The reason why I'm
going to talk
about.
Okay, you're not answering the questions. I understand.
We get the picture. I think we get the idea.
About 5 seconds later, he cuts him off.
You mean from
The interview.
Tapper ends the interview.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically, you're out of here. Don't want to talk to you anymore.
I will say this. I haven't watched the whole thing, so I don't know what was leading up to it. You can't continue to talk over the host.
Mm-hmm.
But Jake Tapper should have just given him, I'll give you 60 seconds, say what you want to say.
Then say bye.
And then we move on to something else.
I think what made Stephen Miller very frustrated from the get-go is because this is what the media does. They book you. For example, they'll say, we want to talk about President Trump's immigration policies, and they book you for that. Then you get on there, and they say, do you think the commander-in-chief is crazy?
Yeah, absolutely.
And they hand
true.
You the mic.
That's absolutely
and so you're like,
do.
Wait, yeah. So you lead off with a question, at least lead off with immigration, and then somehow get to that.
But, yeah, also, Jake Tapper's first response to Steve Miller there, Stephen Miller, was to be a smart aleck.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also true about that.
Huh?
That also was clear.
Yeah, and you're going to start out being a smart aleck and you're the host. That's unprofessional, number one. And number two, you know, you're talking about somebody who works for President Trump. You can expect to get
get it
turned on you, get it back at you. So I think that was if Jake Tapper had handled that differently with his initial response, instead of, I'm sure he's watching in the White House, and I'm sure he's glad to hear that now. You know what I'm saying? What has happened is these professional journalists, and I use that in quotations, they have there's no hiding it anymore. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. They basically they're showing their bias openly today, and they don't care. It's because I'm cheerleading journalism against President Trump. So anyway, that's an interesting exchange there. I like Stephen Miller. I think he's a good spokesperson.
He's very sharp.
Very sharp, very articulate.
Yeah.
Very concise. I mean, it's one thing to get your point across if you meander. I can do that.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I admit I can meander.
Right.
But he gets his point out. You know, 5 seconds, 6 seconds, 7 seconds, 10 seconds, and that's the way you have to do it on these shows.
But you know, you learn as a journalist after a while, knowing Steve Miller's character, you don't go in with confrontation. You just go in with a set of questions and say, "Oh, really? Tell me about that."
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What do you do? You know, if If you go in with a guy, Steve Miller is very good at defending the president.
Right.
He is very good, and he's not afraid to have that verbal fight.
Yeah.
On the you know that going into
he went on the offensive with Jake Tapper, put him on the defensive.
Exactly. So the way to kind of to ease things down is to ask some actually some softball questions to put that guest at ease.
Right.
Yes.
And then you may get as a host what you want to get.
Yeah.
But that was not a good tactic by Tapper. Right. It really wasn't.
Yeah, you know, in years past, I can think of journalists who you knew were liberal, but at least they handled themselves professionally. And I'm thinking about Ted Koppel, for example.
Ted Koppel. Larry King. Larry King was a great interviewer.
Tom Brokaw, others. And you knew where the, you knew where their political leanings lied, but they, for the most part, they handled their interviews with professionalism. And you don't get into a food fight with
That's a good way of putting it, because you know, that's what it turns out to be.
Yeah.
Ted Koppel, I forgot about him. He was very good, and he was a tough interviewer.
Yeah, yeah, and you can ask questions, and then you can even come back with a fact or two that refutes whatever it is your guest is saying if you want to. That's your job, but you don't have to do it in such a combative way that it seems ugly, I guess you could say, or unprofessional. Mm-hmm. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. I'm Tim with Ed and Walker, and we are live video streaming on our Today's Issues Facebook page. If you want to check that out, we thank you for listening to American Family Radio. By the way, Governor Phil Bryant of Mississippi will be with us at 11:05 Central Time.
Great.
After the news, he will be commenting on the good news that the Supreme Court of the United States let stand the Mississippi Religious Freedom Law that was so maligned by the liberal media and others, and mass hysteria created against this bill, which became a law. And it was the mass hysteria was completely unwarranted and unmerited, and that has been proven to be true. And we'll talk with the governor about this victory for he and the state legislature that passed the bill. Go ahead, Fred, what's next?
What's next is, and I'm sure our listeners are familiar with this, over the last couple of weeks, there's another part of the campaign of the left against President Trump has begun, you know, to question his mental stability for the job. That has been out there. I was at the gym the other night, and the headline from CNN again, I'm not picking on them, but this was the headline from CNN, psychiatrist, lawmakers, want the assessment of Donald Trump's mental stability. And they had this, I think it's a lady from Yale or from Harvard, and she comes out and she, without obviously interviewing the president, she comes out and declares that the president is not mentally fit for the job. And then, of course, they pile on and they make stories out of this stuff.
Right.
This morning, Alan Dershowitz, who is describes himself as a liberal,
he's liberal Democrat.
Liberal Democrat, famous law professor, I think, at Harvard, and voted for Hillary Clinton in the last election. But he appears on Fox and Friends this morning, and he is asked about this attack on President Trump's mental fitness. And this is what he had to say.
I've railed against the criminalization of political difference. It's getting worse. The psychiatrization of political differences is much more dangerous. It's what they did in Russia. It's what they did in China. It's what they did in apartheid South Africa. If you don't like a candidate, first lock him up. If you can't lock him up, commit him to a mental hospital. There's a professor at Yale named Brandy Lee who has been leading the campaign saying the president's dangerous. He has access to the nuclear trigger. We may even have to confine him against his will under a kind of commitment law. Imagine how dangerous that would be. And, you know, psychiatrists are notoriously bad at predicting violence.
When he's not even their patient.
And remember that what they're looking at are things they knew about before he was elected president. Look, I didn't like what I saw necessarily, so I did what you do in a democracy. You vote for the candidate you prefer. I preferred Hillary Clinton. I knew about her. I knew about him. I made a balanced judgment. But you don't lock them up. You don't put them in mental hospitals if you don't agree with them. That's so dangerous to democracy.
So there you have it. And I think, you know, that's a liberal, a self-described liberal who voted for Hillary Clinton saying, this is crazy what the left is doing right now with regards to President Donald Trump. And he points to the history of how dangerous this is. You know, it's one thing to joke about, you know, well, that's a crazy thing for Donald Trump to do. But it's quite another thing, and the Democrats are traveling down this road. These lawmakers met with this psychiatrist from Yale. They are out there with the public and trying to make stories out of this that the president is not mentally fit. And they're trying to connect it to the exchanges between President Trump and the leader of North Korea, et cetera, et cetera. That was the latest story that came out. This, I agree with Alan Dershowitz, is very, very dangerous.
Well, this, and this is the thing that I think is might split the Democratic Party, is you have genuine liberals like Alan Dershowitz, longtime liberals from the Jimmy Carter and Walter Mondale days.
Traditional liberals.
Traditional liberals. And you have these fanatical leftists who, since Trump won, have tried to create reasons why he should not remain president. So there's, you know, the Russia collusion thing that's ongoing. There's, you know, he didn't win the popular vote. Now they're saying he's mentally unstable. They're talking about the 25th Amendment, all this kind of stuff. And the danger, what Alan Dershowitz is talking about, when he says it's as dangerous for democracy, is what happens is if you have one side that refuses to honor the results of a legitimate election and tries to use other means to enforce their will, you wind up with civil war in the streets. Mm-hmm. And then that's what Alan Dershowitz is talking about. Can you imagine what would happen if the Democrats somehow worked out a way to get Trump out of the White House through these kind of shenanigans?
Right.
It'd be a bloodbath. Mm-hmm. I mean, it would turn violent in America. And that serves nobody's purposes except perhaps real Marxists who, when the canoe tips over, they're the ones grabbing for the paddles. And that's how Marxists have come to power. And I'm not saying that's going to happen, that's imminent. Yeah. I'm just saying what Alan Dershowitz is saying, that's why it's dangerous for democracy.
Yeah, and also the left is known for taking these avenues like this, the extreme avenues, and then when the tables are turned and this is used against them, they cry bloody murder, like the judiciary. Can you imagine judges intervening and overturning liberal laws that were voted in by the people? They'd be throwing fits, talking about impeachment and all kind of stuff. Not to mention, these psychiatrists are diagnosing someone from a distance.
Right.
They're not physically examining or giving tests to the president. So that's very unprofessional. I don't know any medical school that teaches you to diagnose from 100 miles away. How do you right. know you're reading news articles?
Yeah. If President Trump were doing things that were completely out of character with how he's done things for the last year right. and a half, 2 years, mm-hmm. I would say to you, yeah, maybe there's something going on there. Maybe he's not, you know, maybe he's slipping or whatever. But President Trump is, yeah, he has some outlandish behavioral or tweeting.
Right.
I should say that goes on, but that isn't like this first time.
He'd have to be out on the White House lawn, bare chested, howling at the moon.
Yeah.
Before I would say, oh, we may have a problem here. Mm-hmm. If you're just going to talk about his politics or his
right.
his habit of tweeting back at somebody who attacks him, right. which I don't think he should be doing, but that's not what
mental
a
illness.
Crazy person. That's not mental illness.
Right. Right.
And I'll just say this: I'll probably insult some people. I'm about 50-50 on the whole psychologist profession anyway. In terms, I mean, to me, it's not hard science. There's too much leeway in what an individual thinks about somebody that I go, you better have 10 psychiatrists agree. You can't just have one person saying, I've diagnosed him from a distance
right.
and he's mentally ill.
You know what I have worried about, though, if you get a president who gets dementia, I believe Ronald Reagan, well, he ended up passing away from Alzheimer's, right?
Right.
That's correct.
Okay, maybe he was in the early stages, late in his second term.
Yeah.
Or, you know, midway through his second term. I don't know, but because you don't just die of that overnight. You get there. I'm just saying that, and maybe we didn't know as much about that in the 80s as we do today, but, I mean, dementia.
But that's medically diagnosable.
That's true. Yes. That's true. You can see that on a CAT scan.
On a CAT
right?
scan.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
What we're talking about here is psychologists making a subjective judgment about the mental state of President Trump, and it's based more on the left wing political views of that psychologist.
Right. That's what I fear.
Yeah, that it is, and that's what Alan Dershowitz, who is a traditional liberal. This is back when Alan Dershowitz is back when you could reason with these people. You may disagree with them. I'm talking about the liberals, but now we've moved from a traditional Alan Dershowitz liberal approach to politics and government to an Antifa, which is kind of a mainstream thought process.
Yeah, we're not going to. You're conservative. You can't speak on our college campus.
We've gone from that.
Right. But we'll burn down Berkeley.
Right. So these people, like you just described, that they would they're going to destroy Alan Dershowitz's. The Alan Dershowitz's of the world, too, yes. The traditional liberals, they can't stand them either.
They'll drum them out of the party.
Yes, and they are.
Yeah.
And they are doing that. You're listening to Today's Issues on AFR. Next up, Fred.
Well, President Trump tonight headed for Atlanta.
And okay.
The big SEC game that everybody's been talking about.
It's actually the college football championship, but once again, it is the SEC.
Yes, and you're all Alabama fans, so do you want to get into that?
It's SEC versus SEC. That's why.
Alabama,
the rest
Georgia.
Of the country hates it.
As I mentioned during one of our breaks, this is how I spend my college football season. I root for Notre Dame, my favorite team. I root for both Mississippi teams because I like the state.
Something not right about that, but go ahead.
And then I root every week for someone to beat Alabama.
Ed just lost all our Alabama listeners.
Yeah.
We have a lot of people who listen to us in Alabama.
I love those people.
Okay, but what's your problem with the Crimson Tide?
Well, just like...
Because
they're so good. Yes. And
it's rank jealousy.
It is absolutely rank jealousy. It's like people who hated the New York Yankees on and on. It's like people who hate the New England Patriots.
So you just...
I didn't say I had a rational reason for rooting against them.
So it's sort of like, don't hate me because I'm beautiful, but you do.
Yes. Okay. And I do have to say, don't hate me because I'm beautiful. to all our listeners in Alabama... Yes, so if you're an Alabama fan, I root against Alabama every week because they win every single week. And I'll just tell you, to my dear listeners out there, I can't stand it any longer.
Especially as a Notre Dame fan, right?
Oh, that year they crushed Notre Dame?
Yeah.
I was flying out out somewhere, and I drove to Birmingham. And a lot of times I wear my Notre Dame shirt. Wasn't thinking, my T-shirt. Got on the plane, it was... Alabama hats and T-shirts just about everywhere you looked. I will say this about the people of Alabama. Nobody said anything to me. They didn't beat me up when I went into the restroom, but they just kind of gave me a look like, what were you thinking? And I had the same feeling.
This is post-game when Alabama, when Alabama drubbed them in 2013?
Yeah.
Well, it's one of those situations where you saw the same game they did.
Yeah.
There's no reason to say anything, right?
Oh, right. Well, I just know up in New England where I'm from, they would have mocked me from the time I stepped on the plane. But the kind people of Alabama
that you wear your Notre Dame T-shirt. And
I wasn't even thinking about where I was flying out of Birmingham, Alabama.
Right.
I wasn't even thinking about
who I might encounter. Maybe there might be some Crimson Tide fans on there.
But, watch out tonight, though. The president's going to be under fire. There's already protests planned. The NAACP is urging people to hold up anti-Trump signs and wear white to mock the snowflake label.
The NAACP is wanting people to wear white?
Yep. To mock the snowflake label.
Huh.
So watch that tonight. That'll be evident in that stadium.
Well, the president will be making an appearance. So he'll be watching the game.
Yes, sir. That's the plan.
Alabama versus Georgia tonight, a border war. for the national championship of college football. We will return in 5 minutes after the news. Governor Phil Bryant of Mississippi will be with us in 5 minutes.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.